You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Will everyone please, please just calm down? This is not a year ago when I was leading the panic charge over Freak Out Mountain or whatever you want to call it. Everyone just calm down. The voice of reason is here. Because we felt like we needed to bring somebody in here in the Mass Support podcast to talk everybody down. We're at Saucy Brew Works, as we always are. I'm Brian. That's Bart. That's Brett. That's Murph. That's Sam. Give it up for Neil Seacup.
Hey.
There was much
rejoicing.
I'll use it later.
Too kind. Great to be with you guys.
The voice of reason right here, backed up with... you got like reams of statistics, spreadsheets. You got your laptop out.
The voice of my inner monologue as well. I just like when I'm walking through, it's just I hear Neil talking to me.
The expected goal for this podcast tonight is just for you to calm down and keep things in perspective. This is a new year. These are your defending champions. Everyone has their eye on the Columbus Crew, and it's a long season. And we got a point. So let's talk about that Minnesota game. Welcome, Neil.
Brian.
I'm so glad.
It's so great to see you.
And when I watch on Saturday, I will hear your voice, correct?
The cat's out of the bag. The crew cat is out of the
Breaking
bag.
Breaking news.
So yeah, no Pat travel had that. This week.
That is nice. Yeah. I got stuck coming back from Portland. I actually got back this morning, and I had a layover in Atlanta, and my flight had to change
Atlanta,
twice.
But that doesn't make sense.
Life on the road, I guess. Yeah. But it's nice to be in some of these places I haven't seen in a long time, or just to travel since the radio days. So we'll get into that. That's a lot of fun. But I'm also looking forward to being in a stadium where I have so many memories, or just amongst the fan base, and haven't been in that building since our last regional telecast of October of 22. So it's going to be nice.
What's the challenge
cool.
for you coming into this from because you're doing a national telecast. You're not covering the team exclusively anymore. How much is that in your mind as to your approach?
Not really at all. And I'm sure Brett could back me up here. I've said this before. Maybe he's not, but I've geared a lot of my telecasts in the past, and I clearly knew I was working for the crew and the excitement to build on the regional side, but I prepared in a national sense. And you weren't shortchanged on the other team. I take a lot of pride in that. I think that's why.
That's called being a professional.
It's helped. But not everyone on the regional front, you could say, has maybe done that. So for me, I kind of had that preparation just ingrained, so it wasn't that hard of a transition. And in fact, I think it also helped, because just knowing how well I knew Columbus, that was the second game I did last year for the MLS Apple package, so it was important in the five games that I did to put up a good showing. And it also helps that I had that sense of history with the club that I had done so many games for. But I also like the ability now to tell the stories of the other teams, and having something fresh each and every week is really exciting. And it's a lot of work, but I'm up for it, and it's been a lot of fun. And you know, to see the success of the crew while we developed. And a funny story was that I was riding by the stadium last year before I got the crew game in Montreal on my bike, and riding with a few friends. I'm like, this is the team that would have been really exciting to call. And then 3 days later, I got the assignment to go up to Montreal, which turned out to be a great game, and they won on the road 4-1. But if you're a Crew fan, this is Camelot right now with how things went at the end of last season and how exciting they are to watch. So what better than to step back into the first night game this year in a historic rivalry with Chicago to step back in the building and at least do my first crew game of the season. So really looking forward to it.
I know, obviously, we're thrilled to have you back calling crew games. I'm just wondering, can you take people a little bit kind of behind the curtain a bit more into your prep and the way that you go about it differently as someone who is called, you know, for one team, being been a team broadcaster for a long time, and then suddenly going the national way? I think one of the I think fair criticisms that we've seen, saw especially lobbed in that first season, was maybe the level of preparation for some of the broadcast teams wasn't quite there. You're someone, I think, who's stood out because of the knowledge and depth of knowledge you have with our league, but it's still something different when it's two teams that you don't have a really intimate familiarity with.
No, that's nice of you to say. I think the important thing for anything when you prepare, not just the nuts and bolts of statistics or whatever you do that's on paper or a hard copy version of what you're going to go into the game with, but the thing that's enhanced, and it enhanced my work, I thought, twofold when I moved to TV, probably around 2017-18, it was attending training sessions, but it was the conversational piece and the connection with either talking with a coach or a player, not only with the crew side, but I always kind of started to make it a point. I wasn't always going to get the head coach being the opposing team's telecast, but making sure that I had an assistant coach or someone I could get a perspective on the roster, where they were, because those little fine-tuned details, I think, for me, make all the difference in the world, just because I have something ready to go on anybody at any given time. That's not going to say I'm going to use it, but I think getting a look into their world helped also from just my own preparation within working for the crew. And now with the national setup, those calls are arranged, but I'm still making an effort to fly in early, or at least I have for the seven games that I've done going back to last year, getting in, making sure I can maybe hit a training session of at least one of the two teams and connecting with a technical director or a GM or whoever to just absorb knowledge, because the way it goes for me, I'm preparing up until kickoff with last minute notes or rearranging things and discussion with my analysts. So it's a week long thing leading into when the whistle blows and what you see in the finished product.
Well, is MLS doing a good job of making sure in this Apple TV umbrella that you get the access that you need to do your job?
They are. And I think the public relations staff for the clubs have also been really helpful. And it also helps that I've had relationships with so many of the clubs throughout the years. And I know somebody in particular, whether it be a senior staff member or just someone on the public relations side, that you facilitate those relationships so they can assist you in what you need.
Is there anyone who refuses to speak to you?
Not yet.
I try to refuse to speak
not
to them,
yet.
But we keep having them on the podcast.
Not yet. And I will say, I won't name the club, but for years, they just the gatekeeping or not having access to talking to coaching staff or personnel and being available, and yet I have had one of their games, and it was a complete 180.
Was that NYCFC?
No, I'm not. I'm not revealing the club.
Right,
I'm not revealing the club.
Yes,
that's when you can show your MLS badge suddenly.
Yeah. And I think that's also important, that a lot of the guys who did games or the personnel that they had, they kept a pretty consistent amount. So, just name or face relations that they've had in the past. And while I kind of came late into the game in the summer transfer window last season, I do know that goes back to the regional aspect and how I was preparing to know that I had cultivated those relationships 4, 5, 6 years back. So it all works swimmingly when it comes to that stuff, because I'll be reaching out, whether it's MLS PR, club PR, in the final hour to half hour leading up to a kickoff. So it's good to have.
Truly a Diego Rossi caliber transfer for the summer transfer window for MLS, though.
Yeah. It was great. And Brett knows, it was a tumultuous year, right, to be split from a regional deal where you'd been comfortable doing it for basically half your career, right, mm-hmm. or being part of a club. So, making sure that you kept positive and stayed positive to maybe wait and get your chance. And I had one game in July, and then I had to wait through League's Cup, and then I got four games in September and did one on 24 hours notice. And that's where I think,
yeah,
hey, we've shown what we've got here, so let's see if we can go for more. And thankfully it worked out.
You talk about the prep you normally do. You would think that this would be easier being you live in Columbus and you've covered this team for years, but there's been a lot of changes since you were doing that
sure,
full time.
Sure.
And not only Wilfred Nancy and his staff, but I mean, PR staff has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
So how different even to prepare for the crew is it than you know, the day-to-day of a couple years ago?
Well, that's an interesting question. Caleb was a guy that gave us some phenomenal access. Greg Berhalter before that, at least from the TV aspect, going right back to 2015 for me. And again, Brett can also relate to that. But with Wilfried, who's been super friendly, I actually met him at Mirfield Village last year. We were watching the final round.
Meeting someone on a golf course.
Yeah, he's a big golf fan.
We were watching the final round of the Memorial and Victor Hovland coming up. And I was actually working doing updates for The Fan. Then I didn't see him again until September. And he is, I think, in a way, to his traditions, close to the vest, and was very friendly on the call, but I have access and elements to other people in the front office, and I think that was a big lift just to kind of get caught up when I went in doing that game. But I still watched probably four or five crew games to that point more than any other team, so I had been versed in how the season was going, and you're never too far removed, right? A lot of the personnel that they had from 2022 was still kind of in place for the majority of last year, but just adjust on the fly, and you roll with who you got and what you can get access to, and whether it be Tim Miller in the past or Eunice Kim or now Rob Bick-Burdette, they were always great in helping me out to get what I needed.
Let's get into the Minnesota game.
Well, Carlos Mojica, I want to talk about it too.
And we'll do that by asking you about, because you're talking to people all over the league, what Nancy did in his first season as a crew manager was pretty extraordinary and introduced some, forgive me, kind of balls out tactics that increasingly were more effective. What are other people telling you about what's going on here?
Well, I think they love it. I mean, it's just, we're going to bring an avalanche at you every game and try and stop it. And sure, that you can bring up the issues that they had and maybe closing out some of the games. But I looked at this prior to tonight, heading into today or this weekend, and last I had referenced this actually talking with our friend Mike Arace of the Dispatch. Everyone wants to get caught up on who they brought in to help defend or close out games or, you know, set piece struggles. They referenced the Orlando game and maybe they're leaking oil at the tail end of the year, but they doubled down on beating you with the ball. And they scored 16 goals in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, this was an illustrious run of goals that we hadn't really seen since MLS 1.0 in the 1998 season. And to do that now against the caliber of talent that you face in the league on a regular basis. They were also third or fourth youngest team in the league. So what I looked at was the barometer for them. If they got to two goals, they got to two goals 25 times with the regular season of playoffs, and they won 20 of those games. 20 of those games. So
that's interesting.
They lost three, and they tied two, which is just, it's almost kind of preposterous to think, because how many, not just 1-1 draws might you see across the league, but 2-2. So if they got that second goal, odds are they were going to maybe score more. I think they did that 9 or 10 times. And so I think under the underlying terms, as long as they got to that barometer, then they were able to get the job done. And they did get the job done in the end. So, but I, from a league-wide perspective, everyone, since he has taken over, has been, I think, super excited to watch them. You read the national columnists. You hear what you might on the pregame shows now, that it's going to be enjoyment every time that they come out and possess. And not since, I think, Berhalter's first year, they have the possession numbers that they did last season. And I think for Wilfred Nancy and seeing him put this into place in Montreal, and I was talking with Kamal Miller prior to the Portland game, because he was in there and he goes, that was my best atmosphere so far, because it felt like a family. And I think you saw that also with with what he did for the locker room. And just look at guys like Yao Yeboah and Matan and how the turnaround they had with some of these young players in development. So not to turn this into a word salad, but it's been a positive, uplifting thing around the league when you talk about the club. And two titles in 4 years isn't too bad.
I think it's interesting that you said that about, and Brian, that you asked that. I was in Minnesota this weekend, and I went as a fan, as I do now. The bar that the Minnesota fans go to, first of all, great experience, fantastic.
It's a really good stadium.
It was, yeah. And we'll get into the stadium. I want to talk about that later if we have time. But talking to people, Greg McGuire, who's covered this league for a long time, just fans in general that were coming up to us and, hey, we love watching you guys play. It was so much fun watching you guys in the playoffs last year. We were cheering for you against LAFC. And like, you could tell the people that were just, the casual fans that were just like, hey, good luck today. And then the people that had actually watched this team.
That's Minnesota nice right there.
Yeah. That was a whole separate thing. But I mean, some of the people that really understood soccer and just how, I mean, there was almost, I don't want to say that they were worried about that game. Obviously it's at home and whatnot, but like there was definitely some apprehension of like, this team can come in here and score some serious goals. Now, we know what happened. It was only 1-1, but there's a recognition not only from people within these clubs, but other fans, even in the Western Conference. And we've talked before, there's too many teams in this league to watch everybody each week, right? But I think this is becoming a team, especially with Apple TV and kind of the ease of being able to just flip to whatever game's on. Other teams' fan bases are like, hey, the Crew are kind of appointment viewing at mm-hmm. this point. And, we'll see if they can get the goals flowing like they did last year again this season. But this kind of opened my eyes this week talking to, I went to Cincinnati last year. You're not going to hear that down there, right?
No.
But from Minnesota, you definitely heard the excitement of like seeing that live too.
Because they don't get to see us more than, when you think about it, once every 4 or 5 years.
They're a great team for a neutral fan, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
If you
to
want
watch.
The excitement of what this league is trying to become and all the young signings, never mind the party going down in Miami right now, because they seem like they play in another league at times. With
also
just
not fun to watch.
The attention.
Right now.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they did hammer the hell out of Orlando on Saturday.
But even then, like, well, we don't have to go that way.
No, yeah, I don't mean to get it.
At the end,
but I'm saying the casual fan, the Crew can is a team that you can get sunk into pretty quick.
And for soccer fans around America, that might be, other than Ohio State, that might be the only thing that they really know about the city.
Yeah, because no one's watching the Blue Jackets right now. Not even Bart.
I would hope not.
No, not really. The other thing is, who really enjoys watching the Crew? Lionel Messi. Like, did you see the quote about him on the podcast? I'm going to try to find a quote. It'll be too late in this, but he was just gushing about watching the Crew and how they attack tactically. And it's like, if that guy is and it's not like it was, he went out of his way to praise this team that he's not seen.
It's the only
before.
Reason he came here.
Yeah. All right. He must have an Apple TV subscription.
Brad, I need to hear from you, and I'm going to push the imaginary panic button now.
Down to Brett Hillbrand.
As we talk about the Minnesota United game, the fact that Columbus Crew have only scored 2 goals in 2 games, they got the points. That's fine. You're happy with 1 on the road, I guess. But let's have you and Neil kind of break down the Minnesota game and tell us where we should be concerned and tell us where we should not be concerned and whatever else you two need to do to kind of break this down.
First of all, it's weird to have Neil toss to me and Caleb not yelling at me in the immediacy after that.
He's got
that
his own.
Happened, if that were to happen this year, you get hit with a T-box.
He's got his own problem.
What a weird thing. We can bring that up at the end, too.
It doesn't even break open.
No, hold on.
Yeah, I don't know. Neil, you said it earlier, like, score the second goal, it's not a problem. If you score 2, you probably score 3. And at that point, you're moonwalking the rest of the, probably 25 odd minutes to kind of see out the rest of the game. The Shaberko late sub thing doesn't seem to be, that seems to still be an issue. That's the header that gets the ball, kind of the third ball, if you will, for the throw-in clearance from Steve back in that Shaberko loses that goes to whoever scored the goal, and he collects it and can kind of fits it in from a tight angle. Kind of caught a little bit flat-footed. And once again, we're talking about a guy who hasn't really seen the field a whole lot, but when he does get on the field, you see flashes that look really good and then some issues defending, especially the physicality of it. But it all goes back to me, the Minnesota threw the kitchen sink, the Vikings defense.
Purple people eaters. Like, if I could date myself.
And everything that they possibly had. I'm sure they really hoped that it was like 30 degrees and there were a couple inches of snow. All that went to Salt Lake.
Right, exactly. I was gonna say.
And didn't make its way up to Minnesota, but they gave the crew their best shot in those first 35 minutes, and it was like watching Floyd Mayweather counterpunch. They couldn't touch him. It was in and out, and honestly, without some Matan struggles in that first half and some turnovers, or I had a youth soccer coach who would always get mad whenever you were under pressure and you would pass it to someone who was also under pressure, he would call that a "here you take it" pass, which Matan, his ex "here you take it" passes in that first half was like into double digits.
Only if that guy's Darlington does that work.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Minnesota's best chance comes off of Matan playing with it, playing in Aiden, who's got three guys on him. Aiden turns it over, and they're back out the other side. But you saw, to me, I think, what is the next iteration of kind of Nancy ball and what how strong the foundation is and how they kind of continue to build on top of that is what happens if you need to play as Christian Ramirez as a target striker. The guy whose technical ability, I think, is a lot better than anybody really thought. If you can feed him, allow him to kind of hold the ball up, and then you can play out on either side of him, it looks really, really good. And that's now on tape. That second half is especially on tape. And I think the rest of the league was like, oh, maybe we can press this team. Maybe we can 2v1 them to death and hope that we get a turnover and a transition and we score that. Well, maybe one of the better teams in the league at that right now couldn't do anything while that was going on. So I think it looks really good. Obviously, the defending at the end is a problem, right? We know that it is. No one gave up more goals in stoppage time than the crew did a year ago. And didn't matter in terms of end results, right?
Mm-hmm. Again, it's important to keep in mind, not just second game of the season, but fitness purposes. Right. It's almost a second phase of the preseason. The concern for me that would come with Columbus, just like any other team that's going into now this expanded Champions Cup. Now they jump in around later because they're the champs. But, all these games, again, I'm looking at their roster, right? They've got a bedrock of guys that they play. It's not that there are seven or eight bodies that they're going to rotate on a regular basis. So can they stay healthy through all of that to still stay high in the league? Because the Eastern Conference doesn't really give you a sniff compared to maybe the West right now. I do believe it's that much stronger. And while we're still in the early days of the season, but Brett makes a really interesting point. I think one of the biggest strengths of Nancy as a manager, his ability to adjust and see what's happening on the fly to make those justifications or changes, like pressing high Minnesota. All right, so Ramirez comes in. He can drag into the midfield. So who worries about him, the midfielders or the back line?
The center backs from Minnesota, they didn't know whether to go with Ramirez or kind of pass him off. And so he found space. It was a layoff and then playing in behind.
And if St. Clair doesn't stand on his head, then they're probably winning that game. So I'm not concerned.
He was excellent. And he's a great international. Right. He's Canada's number one.
And for Minnesota, they can look at that as a somewhat victory. They had one of the worst home records in the league last year and threw away point after point. I should know because I did three of their games late in the season right before Adrian Heath got sacked. But that it's never easy to go out on the road, especially playing afternoon. It's not night. I think they'll be fine. You know, how they come out and play in Houston midweek and then address what they do against Chicago, who's a team who hasn't had a ton of the ball, and, you know, they got a $12 million strike who's got one shot through two games. Yeah. So there could be a big week ahead, and then you get going again.
I think the one thing that frustrated me more than probably the whistle should have been blown before it scored is that there were opportunities, I think, to close that game out. And we saw this team close, you know, finally start to close some games out late in that playoff run. And there's a point, I think it's in the 93rd minute, that really sticks out to me, and it's Christian Ramirez, who we're praising, but he has an opportunity to just boot it to the corner, boot it.
And it's a layoff.
And yeah, he said, does a little dink, trying to lay off. And I understand that's Nancy ball, but...
And it was close, like, too. I want to say it was Malty who he's playing in. And he's probably like a stride and a half slow. Mm-hmm. If they connect the pass, the game's probably over. Which is kind of crazy to think about.
But the other thing is, if he boots it, the game's probably over, too.
I agree, yeah.
And so, you know, what are your percentage chances on this if the outcome's still the same? And you know, I get that, you know, the outcome there is they're looking, well, you know, we might be able to score again. But it's sort of one of those, I think the mentality's there, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you don't want guys to have to, like, turn it on and turn it off. But I think sometimes just close the game out. Close the game out.
And I think that's it, is, you know, we talk about that pass from Malte Diaw in MLS Cup. Like, not that this team is programmed to do things, but they work on those type of plays so often that, you know, later in the season, that play may be the difference in, you know, a draw and a win or something. You know, maybe you get that late. Now, I agree with you. At some point, and I used to have this conversation with Greg Berhalter, and eventually he started to shift to that a little bit more of, like, just you want to play this beautiful game of soccer all the time. But, like, sometimes you just have to do what wins the game.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, you did it for 90 minutes. Yeah. 90 plus minutes.
And I think the biggest thing, because we talked a lot, I brought up last week, like, I was really impressed with the way they just put their foot on the ball and killed off the game against Atlanta for large periods of the time. And it's something that they weren't able to do last year. I think they just got tired in this game. I mean, they got tired against Atlanta too, but they were able to see that out. Like, and there were mental, you know, you mentioned the Shaburko thing. Mm. You know, if I know he'd just come on, but how much has he played in the preseason? We don't know. We didn't see preseason games. So, like, you know, where is he mental fatigue, and doesn't get his, you know, jump right.
Well, he's flat-footed. It's basically a free header.
Yeah.
Like, it's an instinctual kind of play.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you're a little bit six and one, half a dozen the other,
sure,
in terms of your reaction to it. But I think it's one of those moments in and of itself, without any context, you're like, okay, sure, fine. If you add in everything that we saw from the guy last year, where there are concerns and there are some things on tape, especially in those very specific moments, the Orlando game a year ago, specifically in Orlando, you're like, oh man, that didn't look good because of everything that you know previously.
And I wonder too, you know, if he gets more playing time, does that stuff get cleaned up?
I would think so, yeah, for sure.
Or is this why he's not getting more playing time? You know, I think, again, without seeing everything, we don't know. Look, I think this game hurts because you had the win, right? And you're 4 minutes into stoppage time. I mean, the 30 of us or so that were in the away section, it was just kind of a gut punch. I mean, everyone just kind of looked around.
But you're used,
like,
to it, though. Well, you've seen this before.
Yeah.
Look, winning games 1-0, shutouts are hard enough. Like,
sure,
winning games 1-0 are really hard. I mean, that's where the element you'd like to give the benefit of the doubt that each team can go into a game and score a goal. So, from their perspective, they're fine.
Yeah, I mean,
they could easily have 6 points. And how many times last year did everyone... Well, they were implementing everything. It took them till after Memorial Day to really get going and find their groove.
So we were talking about all the extra games that this club has to play, and we've already seen Mo Farsi go down. We don't know how long.
And that was a big difference in this game.
Absolutely.
Max Arfson played well, but Mo Farsi, when he's Mo Farsi, makes a difference.
Well, Neil, what is Max not capable of doing that Mo Farsi can do? Because I thought that Matt, just as, you know, fan guy watching the game, I thought Arston had an excellent match. He had the assist. I felt like, you know, he fit into what they were trying to do. What does he not bring that Mo does?
Well, he's young, attack-minded, but there's a reason Mo Farsi supplanted Julian Gressel to start in the playoffs. I mean, it's the defensive security.
Okay.
And everyone wants to get on Mo Farsi every time I talk to somebody in and around the camp, like, how come he can't complete the final pass? They don't. You see who they have on the roster? They got two designated players who are arguably two of the top goal scorers within the last 5 years. They had plenty of weapons in the war chest. So that's not really his job. I think that's what you miss out, just safety, security from that wingback role, cover for the center back with Marrera, who had an amazing season last year. But there's a reason they kept him from going off to the UAE and signing to a multi-year contract extension just for that. That's what you miss.
I think the biggest thing, and I don't know how visible this was on TV, but Steven was not doing normal Steven Marrera things nearly as often, because I think he, I don't know if this was explained beforehand to him, tactically explained, it was more cover for Max than, you know, him and Mo just have a connection. I don't know if it's the French thing. I don't know if it's just playing together last year, but he got involved. I remember at one point when he stepped into the midfield, it may have even been in the second half, one of the guys next to me was like, that's the first time he's done that all day. And I was like, you're right, that is. And I think, you know, he was being more cautious, which just changes it a little bit, right?
Well, it's experience. He played, what, 9 games with Crew 2? How many games did he have with the senior team last year? Right. 8, 9 games? So.
But you see the talent, there, though.
For sure. Also, not his position.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, well, I think it is his position now.
Well, it is with this team, but like I would say the previous however many years of his life, homeboy never played right wing back.
And he's also left footed.
Yeah. The big thing I think with Mo is Mo's absence is the running, right? Mm-hmm. And that outlet through with it's very obvious that they feel more comfortable trying to outlet pressure through the left side than they do the right side, probably because Schulte's left footed. So it's a, you know, kind of an outward touch in and then, you know, kind of playing Amundsen or Yao from that left side. And then how they break pressure and break lines is trying to find Aiden or Darlington square infield and then out the other side to the far side of the field where Mo is almost always by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Minnesota did a really good job of taking that away. They really tried to prevent Aiden and Darlington being able to receive that pass and turn. A lot of times they had to play right back to where it came from. And then when they did turn, more often than not, Max is too far behind the ball or even like parallel to the ball and not in front, kind of pushing that back line where you would expect Mo to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the adjustment, and that's why the adjustment of bringing on Christian was so effective, is it gave them an opportunity to play that outlet ball instead of being through the midfield, playing it through the middle of the field all the way into that front line. So, boom, you know, it's a basically, you know, second man running, third man running kind of situation. And why I think it looked as good as it did. But, I think it's like, it's kind of one of those things, too, where, we addressed it kind of in the off season, and then certainly the week before the season opener, like what was the biggest surprise of the off season was not addressing kind of the right outside back depth.
Right.
And I think it was like, you know, what's something bad that could happen? Well, it's like if Mo Farsi goes down, you've got some issues there. And I think like very quickly it went from a plus side thing to you're changing your identity, i.e. making Steve be as close to Max as you possibly can get to give him a little bit of cover, whereas Steve's more kind of free-flowing role in the back is a plus-sided thing for them. You lose Mo, you lose something that you think, you know, you have really good in terms of motor and everything along the right side, but then you also change someone else's positioning. And so they have to, that's something that I think Max is going to have a pretty steep learning curve, got to mature pretty fast. I do think the games last year were huge for him. Bounced back and forth a little bit like Neil said, but I think I would expect the learning curve to be steep, but not necessarily a significant challenge, if that makes sense, because of everything that we've seen from Nancy in terms of supporting youth, the younger players, and developing those guys at a rate that I don't think anybody even really thought possible.
All right, Neil, you've got to have the inside dope. When are we getting Mo Farsi back?
I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody yet with crew camp this week, right, but I'll find out.
Will you text me?
I sure will.
I'm
concerned about this.
I don't think it's going to be anything long term. Like, from what they said last week publicly, it sounded like he got landed on. You know, if you go back and I think it was on the broadcast at the end of the Atlanta game, like, he's walking around the field looking pretty okay. So didn't look terrible.
I think the one, you know, concern is that you've got a lot of games in a very compressed period of time coming up, and you know, two Champions League games that you need
Bart
the results
will not
in them.
Say Champions Cup, by the way.
If you want to advance, and this is, you know, a trophy that we've talked about, this has got to be one of the goals for this team. You know, suddenly Mo may not be gone long, but he's not going to be 100% for any of these games, I don't think. Yeah. Available.
Yeah, and look, the schedule is what it is. They knew they had this, not a hole at right wing back, but it was obviously the least depth that you have at most of the positions, and it's unfortunate that the injury happened. I saw people commenting, fans commenting online, obviously frustrated after the game, talking about how this team just can't figure it out to play the same way on the road or at home, and talking about the passing. In the Atlanta game, they completed 86% of their passes at home. This week, they completed 82% of their passes and had 57% possession. I think this team is fine on the road. I think
there was nothing in the Minnesota game that, obviously I was disappointed, but yeah, there was nothing in that game where I was thinking back to last year, like, oh, having flashbacks.
2022, right?
Yeah, wow. And 2022 as well. It's really, and the fact that it's against a Western Conference team, in terms of the meaning of this particular match, it's almost zero. So credit to Minnesota United. I think, you know, they were beat up. They were missing some guys, you know.
Two of their three best players.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's a team to watch in the West.
Does that make it more concerning now, even more for Crew, if they're missing two of their best three? But also two PKs that they could have had, let's be honest.
And we'll see. You know, they don't even have a head coach yet. I mean, Aaron Ramsey was still in Manchester for the Manchester Derby that I don't want to talk about. So he hasn't even arrived yet. So we'll see how they play.
It was
play.
A good performance.
There was a game played. Also, real quick, I looked this up while we were there. It's a small sample size. Crew only won 3 MLS Cups. But best start they've had after winning. The last two, 2009 and 2021, they tied both of their first two games. Yeah. So you're well ahead of those paces.
The formula around the world remains the same, especially in this league. 29 years old, win your home games.
Draw your roads.
Draw on the road, and you're fine.
It's no biggie.
And they're fine.
So we're playing Houston on Wednesday down in Houston. I watched some highlight packages. And the one thing I noted from the home game with St. Louis in the Champions League
forever
was that they didn't draw very well for that particular match. So the home field advantage is, I think, is kind of out the door. They've already played 4 games. They had to work to get past St. Louis in the Champions League, advancing on home or on away goals. They're a little beat up too, aren't they?
They are, and it showed maybe a little bit of the fatigue in the second half. The Red Bulls have kind of reinvented themselves, which is another interesting topic.
Yeah, they lost 2-1 to Red Bulls on Saturday.
Yeah, two pretty goals in that game, but I think for Houston Dynamo fans looking full well at the season they had last year, how they really came on strong in the second half, they win the Open Cup in contention in the postseason. But what did they add to their roster this year? And I think that's been the talk, the lack of signings to kind of bolster what they had. Hector Herrera was also out that Red Bulls game. He's a key component to what they have in the midfield. Carrasquilla, you got Steve Clark back there. So kind of reworking
Artur.
Some things. Yeah, Artur, who had a giveaway in that game that led to one of the
ugly.
Red Bulls goals.
That was ugly.
Yeah, so... but it's tough to play. Granted, it's not August, so that's probably a good thing for Columbus, and you can remember what happened they had the two games in the week. It actually preceded the game that I did in Montreal, where they kind of rotated the squad. But I think you're going to see a little bit of a different first choice entity here to come out and set the tone for where you want to go in this thing and to try and become a continental champion. And it starts, I think, and you've got a favorable draw outside of having to take on one of the Mexican clubs here right from the beginning.
Yeah, I think we'll see what their focus is a little bit with this game, because look, Wilfred Nancy doesn't substitute, right? I think people should stop being upset that he only made three subs. It just doesn't happen. He's not a guy who's going to make a lot of changes. And, you know, we haven't seen either of the two, you know, sort of marquee signings in Derek Jones and Hinostroza so far. So I think this lineup will tell you a lot kind of on what their focus is going to be. I do expect there to be some changes. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't still, you know, want to push in this and try and win this tournament. But, you know, if how many changes may tell you, you know, okay, Saturday may be the bigger focus, especially going on the road. You know, we just haven't done this with Wilfred Nancy. We've done match congestion, and obviously he's rotated for that, but we don't know how he handles various competitions, because all they played in last year was the Open Cup and obviously didn't make much of a run in that.
I think
don't have to worry about that this year.
put this firmly in the Brett's possibly overthinking it category, which, you know, of course is very bare and there's not a lot of other things in it. I think they signal intent by going there today. We're, you know, recording this Monday the 4th, March 4th. Team left and is in Houston, or at least on their way. I don't know if they're there yet. I assume they are. Which I think signals intent in terms of going for it, and trying to acclimate time change, potential, you know, weather, all the humidity, everything down there. They're not going in, you know, on Tuesday, getting in at 6, going to bed, waking up and flipping it around in 30, 32, 38 hours or whatever, you know, quote unquote normal kind of road trip is. So that I think shows to me that they're one, taking it significantly seriously, because they should, but two, like, I think it's an opportunity. You know, this is the fifth CCL appearance for the club.
Never including the Giants Cup from attendance purposes in 2003.
Never been past the quarterfinals, despite having teams that absolutely were more than good enough to go semis and beyond. Especially those back when it was when it carried over the entire calendar year. So 2009, 2010, 2010, 2011. Those teams had more than enough depth to be able to be successful. And just kind of give them a little bit short. But so I think it's an opportunity to not just emphasize it at the level that it needs to be emphasized at, but also make some club history, because there isn't a ton in terms of Columbus Crew soccer. There isn't a ton of new history to make in over the course of American soccerdom. And this is maybe that last path
This is the next
explored.
Evolution for the club.
Agreed, right?
Not so, playing in the Open Cup. There's your history.
Well, and that's a, you know,
but they can say they have a trophy,
I have nothing nice to say about that.
Well, I thought you were going to say there isn't a lot of, you know, history of international success, and I was going to say this is Campeones Cup erasure, but fortunately,
I would never.
You don't think they just went to Houston because Wilfred Nancy wants to check out Houston? Like the city?
Maybe never been to that part of Texas, which is beautiful.
The Buffalo Bayou.
This
which
time
is
of year.
A parking lot. They're everything's paved, but they've got great Vietnamese.
I think what also helps in this series, most of the time in the past, Champions League format, if you're a defending champ or coming in, that was the first games you played. They've had a two-game league warm-up. So in a sense, the tone is kind of, while it's a different competition, you're playing MLS competition. I think that aids them in some respects to get going, even with the first leg on the road.
I'm going to play a game real quick. Mm. So we're going to play Columbus Crew CCL history real quick. Neil's not allowed to answer any of these questions because Neil knows all the
answers. I'm going to refrain. But you can phone a friend if you guys need help.
Well, we'll go around here. Yeah. Don't look at my phone. Cheers. So five times, obviously, 2003, 2009, 2010, 2021, and then this year. Who was the first opponent for the Columbus Crew in what was then called the CONCACAF Champions Cup?
Chivas USA.
Incorrect. No one will get this. Well, Neil will get it.
No, I don't even know.
The original Chivas USA?
I've got it somewhere, but I don't have it on me.
Panamanian Giants.
Oh,
does that help narrow it down for anybody? I hope I'm saying this right. Arabe Unido.
Oh, Arabe Unido, yeah.
Yeah. Lost 2-1 in that game.
Sounds like a prospect
winning the second leg 3-0.
Oddly enough, Arabe Unido, I believe, means Arabs United, which is a Panamanian club, which is also random, but I remember
watching. Was that 03 or 09?
That's 03.
That's 03. So that was the Giants Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they got in based off of, they had one of the best attendances in MLS. That was their parameters for qualifying.
Well,
they were in there 2 years, so one would have been for the Open Cup, and the other one would have been.
This is the Open Cup.
Fair enough.
Giants,
yes.
Oh my God, going down the internet rabbit hole.
Giants Cup might have been 2000 or 2001.
Giants Cup was earlier.
Yeah. Dwight said he got off the plane. He did the game, and he said it was like stepping on the equator.
Yeah.
There were some names going down that internet rabbit hole of Giants Cup that were incredible.
I have no recollection of this.
Absolutely incredible. Lost to Morelia, Liga MX Cup quarterfinals. How many wins does the Columbus Crew have in CCL?
Four.
All time. Club wins.
Two.
Yeah, I was going with, I'll go with three since Smurf got four.
It feels like it's a low number, right?
Well, they had two wins the last time they were in it.
Okay.
Oh, shoot.
When Aiden...
keep in mind the format has changed. So in those 09, 10,
because there was a group
11,
stage.
They were group stages where there were four games.
Because I was leaning like five or six.
14.
This Columbus Crew CCL record is 10-3-7. That's 10-3-7 in honor of our boy. That's draws in the middle.
Oh,
10
wow.
wins, 3 draws, 7 defeats.
Well, not bad. Two wins. What
2003, they go 2-2 in CCL. 2009, 2010, 2-2-2 across the board. 2010, 2011, 4 wins, 2 losses. Freaking RSL. And then 2021, 2 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss.
Yeah. They played Toluca in one of those series,
correct,
too.
In 2009.
Scalotto.
2010. all-time CCL goal scorer for the Columbus Crew history. Who has the most CCL goals? One you might get, one is no one will get.
So it's tied.
Emilio Renteria?
It's not Emilio, but Emilio has 3. Emilio is tied for second.
No clue.
Scalotto?
It's not Scalotto, but this is a guy that is, I think we sometimes forget how many goals this guy scored for the Columbus Crew over his...
No, Eddie Gavin?
It's
Ollie?
It's yes. No. Edson Buttle.
I was just going to say Edson Buttle. I was like, maybe that's too early.
Ugh. Tied with the legend himself, Stephen Lenhart.
Oh,
that was my next guess. I was going to Lenhart.
With four.
He had a brace in a game, I think, one of the legs in the year that they played.
Cruz Azul. 2 goals in that game
Edson
as well.
Edson Buttle was one of my favorite. It still is one of my favorite, just like play it.
Appearance leader. If anyone gets this, I'll buy them beer on the pod for the rest of the year.
Todd Yeagley.
No, incorrect.
That's too early.
No one will get this. 14 appearances in CCL, which should indicate his time frame or career kind of frame or window.
Danny O'Rourke.
That's a good guess. That's but incorrect. He's up there though. Double digits.
Eddie Gavin.
Not Eddie.
Brian Carroll?
Not BC, but you would think BC, but it wasn't.
Well, no, but after he got expansion drafted.
It's not Frankie, is it?
It's not Frank.
Hesmer?
It's Emmanuel Ekpo.
Oh, wow.
Ekpo. Oh, that's
Emmanuel
a name.
Ekpo.
We're just remembering some guys on the pod. I love this.
He was afraid of geese. Last one. And this
the greatest crew chant, which I can't say on the pod, came with Emmanuel Ekpo's name involved.
He was afraid of geese?
Yeah. Read Search Notebook somewhere along the line. Or he wasn't afraid. I think he was just dumbfounded about how... populous they were around Harry in the spring.
I'm dumbfounded by that, too.
But he might have been a little scared of him, too. I can't remember the actual...
He was a strange human.
Well, I was going to say, we're making a crew Mount Rushmore...
I'll always remember his goal at home against Colorado. Yeah, yeah. That was really
crew
good.
Crew Mount Rushmore of the weirdos who have played for this club. Emmanuel Ekpo is on that list.
Yeah. So is Jeff Cunningham, but a story I cannot tell on.
Last one, and because it's funny, and Neil will know the answer to this one, but I'll let you guys
I haven't done so well so far.
So 2021, after the 2020 MLS Cup, crew open up against Real Esteli, okay, in Nicaragua. Win the first leg 4-0. Jossie Zardes, Lucas Zelairon, and Pedro Santos penalty in the 40, like in stoppage time of the first half.
Yep.
Come back home to Crew Stadium. Rotated squad after getting smacked around by Philly in the season opener. The crew win on an 89th minute goal by a player who scored his only goal in a Columbus Crew uniform.
It wasn't Aiden Morris who tore his ACL in that game.
Yeah, I blacked out after Aiden.
This year, this was 20.
This is 2021.
Oh my God, that's right.
His only goal with an iconic celebration that he's done a whole hell of a lot in his MLS career, but we only saw it one time.
Kevin Molina?
In CCL.
Was it Kevin Molina?
No, incorrect.
Ooh. I just figured you'd bring up Kevin Molina.
I mean, it does track.
Kind of a weird play. Ball squirts out to the left side. This would be on the parking lot side of Crew Stadium. Shot,
and
rebound.
He plays for another club in the league.
Well, right now he's sitting in a chair watching and maybe talking about it.
Next I was at this game. I was sitting in the end zone.
Bradley Wright Phillips?
It is Bradley Wright Phillips.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Getting the goal and then heel kicking his way.
You should have said he's Neil's colleague. That would have gave it away. Now in the studio.
Yeah, and that is a wrap on Columbus Crew CCL history.
I feel like you had a call about that heel click that game.
We didn't do that game.
No, that was...
Yeah, Neil had all of them prepared and never got to make that call because...
We watched that
game. Now, there was the Derek Etienne Jr. goal when he retired.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he paid tribute by doing heel clicks.
Yes.
Okay, maybe that's what I was saying.
Well, only one goal in a Columbus Crew uniform against Real Esteli, the giants of Nicaraguan professional soccer, I might add.
That's right.
Aiden Morris
right.
game.
Crazy.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, and the Aiden Morris ACL was...
it only made
well.
Him stronger.
But that's what I'm talking about, is if you go back and you look through the history, it's all these goals, all these names, going and playing Monterrey, playing Cruz Azul, and like contending with these really great clubs, but never getting over that quarterfinal hump. That's the next iteration, that kind of unpaved, uncharted territory that I think the club needs to explore and achieve this year.
All right, Wednesday, you flicked the game on Neil. On a scale of 1 to 10, how seriously are the crew taking this? As far as the lineup that you see, the people they're putting out there, what do you expect?
Oh, I'd say 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be all hands on deck.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good thing, and I think this is a beatable team. Ben Olsen, is he the right man for Houston?
Yes. I don't think he's the right man for any.
I think get him locked down, Houston. Get him locked
just
down.
Just won a trophy.
I just don't like Ben Olsen from
Benny Ball works down there. I think Benny Ball really works in the humidity.
I also think they made a lot of different strides with the way they played last year. It wasn't what you were used to seeing with the teams he had in D.C. I mean, they had some players. Yeah. They could some South Americans that could really sling it around. Had some beautiful team goals late in the year.
How seriously
you could
are
argue
they
their personnel right now, but who knows?
I mean,
the West is
up.
A toss-up. Like they could make some additions by April 23rd, which is when the transfer window closes, and look completely different by the summer. You know, DP they, still win you games if you.
Do
if
they
you,
care about this on
sure,
Wednesday?
Of course,
but as much as we do, because they. They've got a lot of moving parts. Artur started in – they've been moving him all around because of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that kind of speaks to perhaps kind of not taking this as seriously as we are, you know.
And who they knows? Can play in the say, U.S. I mean, Open Cup.
They've got the home leg. I really do like what Pat Onstad has done down there. I think
I agree.
He's a smart guy.
Okay.
Really enjoyed when he was up here, and I think – they'll figure it out. They should be a top 7 or 8 team. I know a lot of people are down on them with the way that they approach their preseason and the offseason, but I think they can still be within the top nine of the West when it's all said
they're
and
gonna,
done.
They're going to miss.
But the Crew should win this series.
They're going to miss the dirty work that Corey Baird did for them.
Yeah, that's a great point.
By the way, what he's giving Cincinnati right now, especially in this most recent game that we saw them,
against Chicago.
And Cincinnati's bolstering that back line. You know, they bring in Yedlin today in that signing and or the
Sowery
trade.
Dump.
Caleb Porter. Yeah. Told me.
And they look like a monster on set pieces in that Chicago game, too, with the guys they have in the back.
That if DeAndre Yedlin ever came back to MLS, he would absolutely play for Caleb Porter. Caleb is now 0-2. I don't know how much Caleb tried to get Yedlin with the Crew or now with New England, but 0-2.
There was always a talk about his price range when they tried to get him to come back over.
All right, so Saturday, we have Chicago here. You're doing the game, as we established, on Apple TV. Talk to me about this DP. Hugo Kuipers comes in from Ghent in Belgium.
Yank.
Is that how you say it? That's not how I say it.
The G is kind of like a rolling Yank. H. Yank.
Yeah.
Yank.
I don't spend a lot of time with Belgium soccer.
That's okay, but he had a great goal-scoring record there, and he's a record transfer fee for Chicago. Yeah. And they found Joe Mansueto, their investor operator, at least what I was told for years since he acquired the team, that he was going to spare no expense and spend what he needed to, but they ended up keeping the majority of their DPs, and you can scratch your head because of what Shaqiri has really brought them over the course of his tenure there. And you've got Gaston Jimenez still in the midfield. I do think that like players like Brian Gutierrez, Chris Mueller, who's coming back to being fully fit, are players that can help in the way that Frank Klopas, who's...
How many times has Frank Klopas been
He's an institution at this
Billy
point,
Martin.
Man.
Your guy, Frank Klopas.
The Billy Martin of MLS.
I love Frank. He's a real character. Funny story, he was actually allocated to the Crew.
Yeah.
When he was supposed to play for Columbus.
What?
Yeah.
He was still playing then?
No, this is when he came to MLS from playing over in Greece.
Well, I know that, but
he was a young kid, he was a national teamer. Remember they won the Open Cup and the Cup in their first year? He's late 50s.
Oh. Yeah. I thought he was older than that.
Yeah.
Well, I think
I'm confused.
Being basically an MLS lifer.
57.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, 57.
We probably age those guys maybe a little bit more than what they actually are.
Yeah.
I think if you ask anybody inside the Chicago bubble, and I think, Neil, you would agree with this, that the Ezra Hendrickson, like the easy kind of tenure, just didn't work because they didn't get any of the anywhere near what they were hoping for from DPs. But retaining Frank obviously meant that there was a relationship that he had with Shaqiri where they felt like he was the guy to be able to get the most out of him. And that the Chicago social media team released a video of like a right before kick kind of talk that Shaqiri gives the team. And like, if you look around at the body language of the other guys in the huddle while Shaqiri's like, you know, kind of pumping them up, like they're bought into it, and that absolutely would not have happened last year. So there's something where they've kind of reached in and flipped a switch with him that I think is going to work, because the last time we saw the Chicago team, and I've mentioned this as a joke before on the pod, that it was one of the great like fuck it, I'm out red cards in MLS history, where they were getting smacked around by the Crew and he was just done and got second yellow and bounced. That's not the same guy in a Chicago Fire uniform. Last thought. Absolutely fantastic. It's a travesty that it hasn't happened in such a long time, but we get yellow on red. Yellow Columbus Crew soccer on Chicago Fire red.
Are we sure that they announced the jersey colors yet?
I better be. If not, I'm going to bleeping riot.
We'll just get
the
black jersey out of nowhere, or the Chicago come in and wear white.
I've got that like white... blue speckled. That's like their away uniform they wore in the opener against Philadelphia.
But that was a big deal.
They had 25,000 people at Soldier Field on Saturday night.
It looked like they had
They started the game well. Cincinnati, you could argue, one of the top two, three teams in the Eastern Conference, and they're going to go neck and neck, and that's what's going to make Hell is Real so great this year. And they battered them on set pieces. Chris Brady, another young teenage kid,
who
was really good, stood on his head. Remember, they sold Slanina for a truckload of money to Chelsea, and he's playing over in the Premier League right now. So they've crafted some homegrown talent. The continuity of Frank for being there, and he was coaching this team. They haven't won in Columbus, I want to say, since 2013. Was the last time. And can you name me who had the game-winning goal in that game for Chicago? I got to redeem myself after that Champions League trivia. It was embarrassing. No.
I want to say the assist was by Eric Gehrig.
No. But he played, and I think Frank had just taken over in the interim. He's had like two interim stints in Chicago. No, he played for the Crew. And he was Frank's guy also for a little bit in Montreal. And scored in the playoffs in 2015 in that wild series and the wild game the Crew won here in Columbus to advance. No. Little edge to his game. Little Jersey boy action.
Dilly
Duca.
Oh,
Dilly Duca had the game-winning goal the last time Chicago won in Columbus, which was July of 2013. I remember that.
I think Dilly's coaching in Jersey.
He might be, yeah.
I believe
that's,
so.
That's a fun story to Dilly's exit from Columbus sometime. I think that your boy, their DP, name is escaping me. You were just talking about
Shaqiri.
There we go. Mm-hmm. I want to say Shaqiri.
Meatball Matan.
Well, as we were watching the game at my buddy's house in Minneapolis on Saturday night, it occurred to me that he looks like every really good player who played like college soccer and then crapped out because they wanted to drink beer and now is just doing whatever they can in over 30 or over 40 soccer leagues. Like, that's what, I'm not saying that's what he is on the field, but he just, you know, he's always been big, but it looks like he's just kind of put on a few pounds.
Who, Shaqiri?
Yeah. He's still got the skills. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, I don't want to hear about it if he scores on set. But, like, he just looks... I have a few friends who used to be really good at soccer, and now when
kinda
I call
like
them...
Kind of like he's layering up to go play the Thanksgiving Day
cold.
Football game in the morning.
It's cold there in Chicago. So how do you say that Belgium club's name again?
Ank.
Yes. Ank. I have angst. Yank. Can I
people
just
will pronounce
angst?
It with a hard G, gang, yanked? And that's fine.
I mean, well, I think people get it mixed up with Gent,
yes,
which is
Gent.
I believe
Yank.
Is that's Netherlands, maybe?
No, that's
is
Belgium.
Is it Belgium? Yeah. Okay, I think they get it mixed up. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I take it they haven't really figured out how to work this guy in yet. But yeah, I thought that the Chris Brady looked outstanding in Cincinnati. By the way, those Acosta corner kicks are ridiculous. Those low, bending, shortish corners that they kept firing at Chicago. I mean, it was ridiculous. We better be ready to play
he
them.
He kissed the post on one of his shots. Yeah. They could have had three goals in the first half. But from Kuiper's perspective, he's got Miles Robinson in there now. You get the center back quality of him and Miazga, and they can keep an eye on a player like that, and he's still figuring it out, so you don't want him to do that if you're a Crew fan probably this weekend.
All right, I'm getting the wrap it up sign from Sam. He's got
we're all out of time.
Yeah, volleyball tonight. All right, we got to get Sam to volleyball real quick. Let's make our picks first, the Houston game. And I'm not going to ask you to pick Neil.
That's right. I have to say neutral. I'm natural. I'm national here.
It's the Herb Street.
Oh, wait, you
he's
last,
he's abstaining because he's calling the game.
Brett, make a pick on Houston.
The Houston game, I really like a Crew. I think they're maybe a little bit pissed off after the Minnesota game. So a big bounce back, I think, for them. 2-0 on the road in Houston. And I'm sticking with the same scoreline in the Chicago game as well. Maybe a little bit of a rotated squad, possibly, and that one with a couple people. So 2-0 in both games.
All right, very good. Murph?
I'm going to say 1-1 in Houston. Get it back to Columbus, take care of business there. In here against Chicago, Cucho has 5 goals in 3 matches against the Fire. Let's make it 7 goals for Cucho. He scores twice, Crew win 3-1.
Including
I can
totally
debut.
See that happening. So, I mean, he's
in Chicago.
Mucho gusto, Cucho.
He's locked in. Sam?
I also think it's going to be like 1-1 or 2-2. And I think Steve Clark tends to get up for Crew games.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know. Goalies have good games against Crew players. Like, they have to stand on their head. So, I don't know. 1-1 or 2-2. It's a tie. I'll pick a tie at Houston. Mm-hmm. I'll go 2-1 against Chicago.
All right. I'm going to go 2-1 Crew in Houston. Our tour somehow scores for Houston.
It doesn't happen that often. Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Anyway, it's not the playoffs. That's usually only when it happens.
Against New York City.
And
right.
Against Chicago, I think there's going to be a goal explosion here. I'm saying 3-1. Bart?
Love that.
Yep. I'm going 2-0 down in Houston. And it is the only scoreline you can ever use for Chicago. 3-1 Crew. And I'm saying I like the rotation. I think Taha comes in, goal in his debut, baby.
Wow. No Aiden Morris, huh?
Oh, well, Aiden's got a brace.
He's got a first, too. Yeah.
I am predicting an exciting game because that's what we need.
I hope they all play well and have fun.
I'll say 2-1 Columbus. Yeah. Tomorrow, Wednesday night.
Where can we see that?
The real victory is being back in the building, seeing all you guys who I've known for a long time. Absolutely. So it's been great to be with
it's
you.
It's on one of the Fox Sports.
FS2.
FS2. Yeah. Okay, good. I can see it. All right, Neil, thank you so much for being here.
Yep.
I look forward. I'm excited to. I'm staying at home watching the game.
A real pleasure.
To take you in.
You can just watch it back. Flip it on. Go to the game.
I want to experience it with you.
Okay.
Live with a slight digital delay. I understand how that works. But I want to experience it 5 to 10 seconds after you do.
Oh, it's more than that.
30 to 45 seconds after you do. And I want to have that experience. It's so great to have you working those Apple TV telecasts. That it should have been the way it was in the first place. But, you know, we take what we can get in this life and just have fun. Have fun traveling this weekend.
I believe I've said that a time or two. We're here to have some fun. So.
Let's go play some golf again.
I should have played today. There's just so much work
so
now.
Beautiful.
Like, oh my gosh,
it was so beautiful.
It's the golf will come. Yeah. Like they said, like they said here once upon a time. The goals are coming.
The goals.
They showed up last year.
They were already taking. They've got the counter for that New England already.
Man, while you were talking, I just shanked one into the woods. He's played golf with me before.
No, pleasure
knows.
To be with you
Sarah,
guys. Thank
we
you.
We should have a Massive Report golf outing.
Love that.
I right? hope it is a
I'll
scramble.
Set that one out.
It needs to be a scramble because I can player. Drop it. Over
Murph
the
can drive the cart.
The best of them.
I suck at golf.
I am a good putter.
If you guys need someone to drink your beer, I will be there for that.
You can drive the cart.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. All right. Thanks to Saucy Brewworks for having us. As always, we do appreciate it. I got to grab that order, so let's get out of here. Like and subscribe the Massport Podcast. You would. Thank you, Neil Sinka, for being here.
My pleasure, John.
All right. Come back
great
again
to be with
anytime.
You. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.